I am fantasy and paranormal romance author Leslie Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, March 26th, 2023, and this is episode 211 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is I went up to New York with my very good friend, author Inez Johnson, and we saw Faded Mates live. Faded Mates is a romance-centered podcast hosted by author Sarah McLean and editor, reader, librarian, I believe, Jen Prokop. Inez is a super duper fan, and it's her birthday, and she really wanted to go see this recording live. They had actually come to this area, I guess, last year, but it sold out really quickly. So I was like, sure, just a day trip, like an overnight day trip, half a day this day, half a day the next day. Up on the train, I went to New York, went to see the show. It was really good. It was really fun and a lot of good energy, a lot of people there. They had games and they had a panel of authors. It had just been organized really well to be entertaining and funny. So I had a great time. Other cool things that happened this week, I did the cover reveal for Beastly Kingdoms that is out in the world. I will throw that up on the screen for the video folks, and link is in the show notes for everyone on audio. Pre-order is up in many places, and the pre-order campaign is also up. All these links will be in the show notes. And if you're interested in reading an advanced reader copy, there's a form for that. So just let me know. I am finalizing the files now, got it back from the copy editor, went through it, almost all of it, on the train ride. I still have to finish Act 3, but it's looking good, looking clean. I'm going to throw it into vellum, get the paperback set up, get my contact the cover artist to finish the paperback layout cover. And then, I worked with friend of the podcast, Becca Mizor, who is also the fairy plot mother, on the blurbs for both Savage City and Beastly Kingdom, updating them, refreshing them. She does a great job with that. And so she has a service where she will sit live with you on Zoom and kind of just rework your blurb, either from scratch. She took my existing blurbs that I had written and fluffed them up, you know, made sure all of the delicious tropes and the universal fantasies were in there, which I was trying to do, but she really has a gift for that. So I'm very grateful to her. And so now that I have the blurbs, I've put them up on the retailers, got to have it for the back cover of the book. I think I might actually use the original blurb I had for the paperback just because it conforms better to that format. I think the blurbs she did are really good for Amazon for online retailers and also being able to shift and move very quickly. I think the original blurbs that I wrote were a little bit more, I don't say evergreen, but they're more traditional and maybe they're just better for our paperback. My thinking is a little muddy on this, but we'll see what happens. For those library readers, I can't update or upload to like Ingram, Baker & Taylor, the print book until it's done. And so that will hopefully happen this week. And then Hoopla and all of that, I need the final files. So on the pre-order form, there's a check mark. You know, you can enter the pre-order giveaway if you request the book from your library, but it might not be possible to request it yet because it's not on all the databases. And I had a very helpful librarian who's on my author newsletter after I sent my newsletter this past week. This week, emailed me and said that she couldn't find it in the database. So that should be fixed by the beginning of April. That is my goal. Sherman is walking around in the hallway, if you can hear his very loud footsteps on the floor. So yes, all of that, you know, all these kind of self-publishing details that I have to go through. I have a checklist somewhere, but I'm not using it. I'm just doing things as I think of them. My other announcement is that if you're listening to this in real time, this is the final week of the introductory pricing for my course, Imaginary World Building, Creating Fictional Worlds for Writers. Price goes up March 31st, or actually April 1st. But, you know, when you say something happens on April 1st, people are like, oh, is that a real thing? Are you fooling? So March 31st is the last day for the intro pricing. Got some great people taking the course right now. I'm getting good feedback on it. And yeah, it's going pretty well. So I'm going to be ramping up my marketing efforts. I mean, going pretty well for me not having really marketed that much. But I am, as I finish the manuscript I am working on that I'm going to be talking about in my writing update and turn it in and some time frees up, I will focus more efforts on getting the word out about the course and making sure people know that it exists and it can help them if they are interested in learning about world building. If you are interested and haven't signed up yet, you can go to myimaginaryfriends.net for course information and to register before the price goes up. So my writing update, I am working on the Black Towns book. I have been brainstorming other titles, and I have a couple that I really like. So I actually get to meet my editor from Orbit in person this coming weekend when I go back to New York for the Center for Black Literature conference on speculative fiction. It's got a long name. There's a link to it. And yeah, I'm sure we will discuss titles for the book. But going really well, again, still going well. I'm into Act 3. Act 3 is all new words. I can't really keep anything that I wrote before, so I'm planning to fast draft it, maybe Monday, Tuesday. We'll see how that goes and start cleaning it. Clean those chapters, and I have to go back to those interstitials, which I've been talking about for weeks, although I have ideas for them. I've cut one of them that I really wanted. It was a really cool piece of history that I wanted to include, but it's just going to muddy the waters, and I don't think it's going to work. So that'll be one of those things when people are like, oh, what didn't you get in the book? And I'll be like, well, this is a really cool thing that I found that I really wanted in there, but So we'll see. I haven't finished writing them yet. It's about maybe 3 scenes. So write all of Act 3, these extra 3 scenes, clean, polish, reread, hopefully have time for either Pro Writing Aid, which is like a Grammarly type AI editor thing, software, or have the computer read it to me. I don't know if there's time for that. I do feel very good about the time I have left and being able to finish what I have. So it's just pushing forward, keeping writing. I didn't work on the book over the weekend, which I had planned because I really wanted to get the Beastly Kingdom copy edits together. And that process, you know, needing to do that before I get the files done and all that. So it's fine. It's probably good to have a little bit of a break because I have been going 7 days a week for the past couple of weeks, and having a break usually opens up the doors of creativity for me. So I still feel good about it. I've been thinking more about chapter titles, which I talked about previously. And part of the magic system for this book in this draft has been incorporating African proverbs. And so I'm thinking maybe chapter titles could be proverbs. This is just a thought. We haven't actually gone through this. That'll be the last thing I do is reread it and see, okay, is there sort of like in Earthsinger Chronicles where there was an epigraph for each chapter that was a made up folk tale from the world. I've been taking these proverbs and changing them slightly, just customizing them a little bit. And we'll see. I can't remember how many chapters I'm at, but I'm sure there'll be 50 chapters at least. And I have way more than 50 proverbs in my sort of long list that I've been collecting since I've been doing this. So that was an idea that came to me and feels integrated into the theme and certain aspects of the story. And then I have these supernatural characters that, you know, one of the points of feedback from my editor in the first draft was that they just need to come alive more. They need to be more present on the page. And she thought I did a good job with Monsters We Defy, with the enigmas. And these are different types of supernatural characters, but they needed to pop as much as those characters did. And I remember having much clearer idea when I was writing that book of those characters and their agendas. And that you could feel that in the book. So in this draft, I know them better. But I also wanted to infuse them with natural phenomenon, like language, metaphors, imagery of natural phenomenon. So for one, I chose storm and heat. And for the other, I chose starlight and winter. And that was really interesting. I went on to onestopforwriters.com and they have a weather thesaurus. And I don't know how much I got from that, but just trying to figure out how do I use descriptive terms for this character that, you know, give the imagery of storm and the feeling of heat, that when you're looking at her, you see a storm in her eyes and you feel, you know, the temperature actually changes when you're interacting with her. It's like that powerful and that magnetic. And then the other character, starlight and winter, it's like cool and frosty. And then the idea of starlight, you know, even in, I think it was a moonlight. One of those is actually in the weather thesaurus. And, you know, it's just like, there aren't really any descriptors about this. So how do you do this? And how do you make it feel like that? And that was kind of fun and interesting and just a way to ground these characters in this natural phenomena to make them distinct and reflect their personalities with these descriptors and everything that goes along with it. I was also on a quest to find out when my character would have seen snow. So I'm not naming the state that their town is in on purpose, but I'm basing a lot of the, you know, flora and fauna on Alabama. And so I was like, well, how often does it snow in Alabama? And when would they have had like a storm that they, like inches of snow in the 20s or the 30s that my character would have experienced snow? Because when she meets this supernatural character who is Starlight in winter, I want her to have, you know, memories of that time it snowed in our town. And nobody knew what to do because we didn't see snow that often. It actually snows, like dusts or sprinkles, you know, pretty regularly in Alabama, but I, you know, inches and inches of snow is still rare. But there was a year, and I found the year and I don't have it in front of me now, but in the 20s. So when she was a kid, it did snow. It had a white Christmas in several parts of Alabama. And so I found the real history that I can use. And it's like, no one will know, but I will know. And I feel better having looked it up and grounded myself in the actual facts. But also this week, I had more gifts, more revelations about the story that really connect the dots. I mean, I had this one brainstorm and I had to tell somebody. I was like, oh my gosh. And it's kind of an obvious thing. Like, it seems inevitable that this would have been the case, but I hadn't conceived of it before. So there's the common wisdom that endings should be inevitable, surprising, but inevitable. And this surprised me, but it made perfect sense. So this week I wanted to talk about how you do the work and the gifts will come, because, you know, I've been working on this book for a long time. And at this point, 2 weeks before the due date, to find out this thing that's going to help me in the end and kind of bring everything together is kind of magical. And I just was just blown away. Because I've spent so much time thinking and researching and writing and brainstorming that I didn't have to consciously think of this. It came to me at a moment when I needed it. And it sort of just blew my mind. So I had an article in the Footnotes newsletter about creativity, and that creativity is really about connecting the dots. And I feel that happening in real time as my subconscious works on it, as I go into a scene with a very brief outline, not knowing what's going to happen. And then by the end, by the time I've typed it, I have made this discovery. It's like those dots were being connected all along in my subconscious. And the creativity comes through in saying, okay, I'm holding the story in my mind and I know these things that I still need and I don't know the answers to, but I have faith that they will come because I've been sitting here doing the work for a year and a half on this book. And it's just kind of miraculous. So if you are stuck and you don't know what to do, do the work, sit in the chair, you know, button chair, hands on keyboard, and allow your mind to make those connections. Allow your creativity to connect those dots. Give yourself time and space to connect them. And it's been my experience that it will happen. The story comes together and it's so much stronger for it. In other writing news, I have been trying out some AI tools for marketing purposes mostly and brainstorming, just seeing how it goes. And inevitably, you know, you type something in there to help brainstorm, to jog your mind. You get a bunch of stuff that you can't use, but it does spark something in your brain that you can use. And I talked about it some last week. I used it to brainstorm topics for these three essays I have to write, or at least two of them. I had an idea for the third one. And yeah, titles, trying for outlines. You can't just lift it up and use it. At least I wouldn't. It's the most generic, bland, you know, words possible, just the most obvious, cliched sort of things. But there's stuff in there that makes you think, and then I went and wrote my own thing. I've tried ChatGPT for a bunch of things, and then I tried PseudoWrite. PseudoWrite is for creative writers. I guess it's for fiction writers mostly. And I've tried it to jumpstart some descriptions. Once again, nothing I could really use. it wasn't right. You know, it wasn't the style. It wasn't where I was going. But there were a couple of like word combinations or phrases that sparked my imagination and then got me going in another direction. So I'm open-minded to it for that kind of thing. And I think it can be helpful, you know, for essays or nonfiction work. What I usually do is pick a topic and then look at, Google it essentially, and look at other articles that are out there so that I am not writing the exact same thing, see what people are saying, see where the gaps are that I can fill. And this is sort of a shortcut to that. I feel like I've heard Joanna Penn say that it's, you know, another kind of search engine almost, or thesaurus. That's how they talk about it being a writing assistant. And so instead of Googling a bunch of articles on a topic, I put the topic into ChatGPT and it gave me a bunch of potential, like sample titles of articles that seemed pretty reasonable, but also generic. And I think I asked it for an outline for something and also generic, but I saw gaps in that I could fill, and it got me thinking about my own opinions about what it was saying. And so I think I will continue to play around with it, understanding the limitations. And, you know, once again, there's ethical things involved with AI, I believe, that are going to shake out. But as long as you're using it as an assistant and it's not your first draft, which I think is sketchy, or like I mentioned before, I had dictated some stuff and it cleaned it up, putting in the punctuation and capitalization and things. That's super helpful. I mean, we're already using AI and not realizing it for so much, so why not? So that's been my recent experience. I've been on some podcasts recently and YouTube channels. So I was on The Indie Author with Maddie Dalrymple. We had a really cool conversation. I was also on Between the Reads with Audra Russell, which was so much fun. It's my second time on her podcast, and it's always a blast. Shout out to Audra. And I was also on Carly Stevens' YouTube channel in an interview. So shout out to Carly. Thank you so much for all of those interviews. I will link to all of them in the show notes so you can check them out. I also want to mention my friend Inez Johnson from Faded Meat's trip this weekend, who was also my college roommate. We've been friends for almost 30 years. And she is a fantastic writer of multiple genres with multiple pen names. She has a podcast that I'm not sure if I mentioned, but I need to. It's called Inez Johnson is Having a Breakdown, and it's available in video and audio. It's a craft-based podcast, short episodes. She is a master of craft. She was a TV writer. She was a teacher, a college professor for a long time, and now she's a multi-six-figure indie author of romance. She knows a lot about story. She has a lot to tell you, so check out her podcast. I will link to it. Highly recommended. And finally, there was this really interesting article called The Perils of Niching Down. Now, it's coming from a marketing perspective on how to essentially market. He was marketing, I believe, some sort of filmmaking course or something in the niche of filmmakers or indie filmmakers. And the author of the article just sort of, I feel like he burned out on marketing, on all of the best practices and the things that they teach you about copywriting and having a niche and, you know, email sequences and funnels and just all of the stuff that we as writers, specifically indie writers, learn about and are taught to, you know, do very similar things with the marketing. And it was really refreshing to read this, because he kind of burnt out on it and it was like, how do I do this in a way that feels more authentic? A lot of marketing can feel inauthentic, especially when you're doing this thing where you're selling to people and you're trying to convince them that they have all these problems. You know, those infomercials or just regular commercials where, oh, have you ever had this problem where you can't open this jar? And the person is just like doing something very ridiculous. Like, no one has this problem, really. They're overblowing it so that they can sell you this jar opener or whatever. And that's what a lot of marketing feels like. So this is a perspective of someone who was a master at that, who, you know, made a very successful company doing that and burnt out and was like, how do I do something that feels real, that feels like I'm giving instead of taking? And he's created this whole ecosystem, which I think is interesting. I signed up for his newsletter. But this particular article just sort of underscored things that I had been feeling. Now, the bad part is that this whole authentic marketing thing is untested territory. We know the regular marketing works. Funnels work, email sequences work. Even if they make you feel kind of grimy, or they can. But I don't think that people know if something else will work, if doing it another way. So he's doing a lot of experiments. I think it really depends on your comfort level, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Do you need to sell as many books as possible so that you and your children can eat? That is a question. At that point, it doesn't matter if it feels bad to you. Like, you have to do it. You're just going to do what works because it works, and this is your main source of income. So there's a privilege involved in trying to think about it differently when it might not work as well. You're probably going to sell less if you're not doing these X, Y, and Z things. Like, I'm not doing an email funnel. I'm not doing, the long email sequence for my course, the thing I'm trying to sell. And I believe if I did that, if I followed all the best practices, I'm sure it would sell much better. But I didn't want to. I don't have the time. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good to me. I don't like getting emails every day from people with like nothing really to say. They want to make sure that they're in my inbox, every day or every week so that they can sell me something. And I stay subscribed to these things for research purposes, but sometimes I just get frustrated and unsubscribe. And even if it is like a little bit of value in your email, it's kind of not quite enough, like whatever. And I just don't have time for that. And I don't have the desire. So I'm interested in these sort of experiments of how can I do something that feels authentic to me that I enjoy doing. I like to do things that I enjoy doing. Like, the podcast is not really a marketing vehicle. It's something that I enjoy. If I was doing it much smarter, I would do it differently. I would have interviews with other authors so that they could promote me too. And that's all fine. I just didn't want to do that. Although I am still thinking about this second podcast idea that is sort of a clone of Book Exploder. And I'm interested in that, in talking to other authors about one chapter or one paragraph and how they wrote it and why. Anyway, I will link to this article. It's got me thinking about a lot of things, and I'm following along, seeing this community of people that he has created that want to do things a little bit differently. He's got a whole manifesto. He's got a whole thing going on that you may or may not be interested in. But at the very least, if you are someone who has to market something, I would recommend this article, which I will put in the show notes. Finally, there was an interview with Brandon Sanderson in Wired magazine, I guess the online, is it still a magazine? I don't know. On Wired, that I saw people talking about online, and I read it. I sent it to my brother, who's a big Brandon Sanderson fan. He's been working his way through all of his books. And I was like, my text to him was, this article is bananas. You might have heard of it. If you feel like reading 4,000 words of, I'm a writer, but it's early and I'm still a little tired from my trip. So I'm trying to find the right words to describe this. It's a hit piece. I saw someone call it yellow journalism. I saw someone else call it jealousy. It is an article where the author, the journalist, goes to Brandon Sanderson's house, meets his family, his extended family, stays in his guest house, has multiple days with him, takes his child to an amusement park, meets his friends. Brandon opened his arms up to this reporter, who then came and wrote the worst article I've ever written about another person. I don't know how it got published. He repeatedly says that Sanderson is not a good writer, that he's boring, that he's lame, that he dresses badly, he makes fun of his ideas being bad. It's so much. And as a person who's not particularly a fan, like, I've read one book of Sanderson's, I enjoyed it. I really liked Writing Excuses, the podcast, for many years. I think he's doing amazing work. I think he's, the rising tide lifts all fantasy authors. I don't have anything bad to say about him, which is not even the point. Like, who cares? I probably wouldn't say it if I did, but I was just flabbergasted. My brother was like, he should be fired. Why would anyone do anything like that? So my point, circling back around from my sort of outrage on behalf of this someone I don't know, I've sort of always had this secret desire, goal to have one of those articles written about me where the journalist comes and meets me for lunch and we sit and chat. You know, I remember reading an article about Fiona Apple. Usually it's musicians that get this treatment, like a Rolling Stone or something, where they'll like go and they say what she had for lunch and they describe how, you know, it's just an in-depth, long-form article about you. I thought that would be really cool. And now I'm like, maybe not so much. Although I've never read one so bad before, but I mean, they will have disparaging comments in them, usually from the journalist's point of view. I don't know what my point is. I was just affronted by it. Now, Sanderson went on to Reddit and wrote a very kind and when they go low, we go high sort of message to his fans, talking about don't go after him. He's a human being. He's entitled to his opinions. Yes, it was hurtful, but you know, there's no need to basically troll him or do all that internet foolishness against him. And I think that was very admirable. You know, I'm sure that is it seems like a very Christian thing to do. I mean, you know, the article talks about Mormonism and I always like the high road. That speaks to me as a human being. At the same time, I would not be opposed to that journalist being fired because that wasn't journalism. And it was awful. So made me really rethink some of my goals, my wishes to be at the level where someone would want to do that kind of article about me. But we'll see. Anyway, just wanted to give some thank yous and shout outs to a YouTuber, Margaret Bernard, who's doing really great work. She is co-running the latest AuthorTube writing conference, which is coming in a few months. And I wanted to give a shout out to Lily, who sent me a wonderful email, and also Kiana and her uncle. So I did a live event last week, whenever that was, with Veronica Henry and Nicole Glover. And one of my readers, Kiana, couldn't make it, but she sent her uncle to ask some questions and get some books signed. And he was lovely. And so I just wanted to give them a thank you and a shout out. My goals for the coming week, finish this book this week so that I have my extra week to review, polish, just tighten up, you know, file off the ragged edges, all of that. And I feel good about that. I hope that you have a wonderful week and I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriends.net. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. You can email me at podcast@lpenelope.com. I would really appreciate a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcast.